This show is part of the Pod Tyrant Network. For more podcasts, interviews, and content, visit podtyrant.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Bad Wolf Radio, a discussion and review podcast all about Doctor Who. I'm one of your hosts, Aaron Goins, and I'm here with the man who regularly checks elevator walls to see if they're a wormhole to another dimension, Adam Farmer.
I definitely do it cautiously. I'm not like running full bore at those elevator walls. I'll tap occasionally, see what happens.
Elevator, lift, you know, whatever. I did notice that in this episode of Doctor Who that we just watched, The Power of Three, that the terminology, the British terminology, was coming out strong.
Yeah, outside of lift. Was there anything else that jumped out to you?
Yes, lounge.
Okay.
Instead of living room. Like, I'm sitting in your lounge. Something about Rory calling his underpants his pants.
Yes, I did pick up on that as well. When he said pants, I was like, wait a second, you have none on.
Yeah, he's like, I'm in my pants. And I'm like, you're not in your pants. So I didn't, so the terminology, the slang, it's a little different over there, but they kept calling it lift, and that kind of threw me off.
Yeah, I mean, we can follow along. We're pretty good with it.
We've watched enough TV. I wouldn't call it, what's the term for people that are really into British television?
Anglophile,
yes. I'm definitely not, I wouldn't consider myself an Anglophile, but I do enjoy things like, you know, Doctor Who, Sherlock, but doesn't go much further than that.
We did make it through our definition of chuffed, though, so chuffed, we're getting better.
Yeah.
We're chuffed to bits.
We're educating ourselves.
I don't know if chuffed is necessarily educated.
So speaking of Rory, he is going to be attending some conventions coming up, or at least one that I'm going to be going to.
Which I am super surprised about. Like, I can't get over the fact that he's actually doing it.
Yeah, so I'm going to Dragon Con in a few weeks. Very beginning of September, leads right up to the Labor Day weekend. I will be going to Dragon Con. And Dragon Con, you know, it's a big convention, but it's very much fan-run. And, you know, a big costuming convention, but not necessarily known for drawing the biggest celebrities. I mean, they get some big ones, but not at the same level as something like a San Diego Comic-Con or New York Comic-Con. But there's a decent representation for Doctor Who that I just kind of realized this after I looked at their website the other day. And I'm pretty excited. Arthur Darvill's going to be there, which I've never seen him at a convention before, so that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, and following him on Twitter, just keeping an eye on what he's been doing, he has grown on me even more after he's left Doctor Who.
And then we have Amy herself is going to be there, Karen Gillan. And then River Song is also going to be at Dragon Con. I'm pretty excited to see them. I think they're doing a panel all together.
All the ponds.
Yes, and in fact, the title of the panel is something like that. Something about like an evening with the ponds or something like
that.
Nice. So, yeah, they'll be doing a panel together, and then I believe all three of them will be doing photo ops. So, which I don't typically pay money to take a photo with a celebrity, but I have made exceptions. And one of the exceptions I made was to take a picture with, now I'm blank on it, Noel Clark.
Yeah, I was going to say, are you going to try to reenact the picture with Rory that you did with Noel Clark?
Well, the thing is, that was like 3 years ago, I think, that I did that. And Dragon Con has kind of changed a little bit since then. I don't think it's quite as easy to get the picture, you know, to kind of go up and talk to the celebrity for a minute and then, you know, get kind of a very informal picture. They've really formalized the process now.
Okay.
And so, which makes it a lot harder to access and have like a real conversation with them. They kind of just like, you know, push you through there real quick, take a picture and go. So because of that, I'm a little more hesitant to pay the money because I think I looked it up. I think it's gonna be $60
to take. Okay. Yeah.
To take a picture with Arthur Darvill. So, and I think he would be like my first one. I feel like he'd be the hardest one to get later, so I might as well get it now. Alex Kingston and Karen Gillan tend to go to these conventions a lot. So getting a picture with them would be easier in the future, but I kind of want to get Rory now. So we'll see. I don't know. I haven't decided yet what I'll do. What would you do, Adam? Would you pay the $60 to take a picture with Rory the Roman?
Nah, don't put me on the spot. I have no idea. Probably not, but that's not, that has no, that means nothing about Rory himself. More that I just hate.
He doesn't listen to our podcast. You can say it.
No, he's solid. He's a solid guy. I like him. but I just don't spend money on anything.
Well, one of these days I got to get you to come to a convention with me, and then I will have much more of an influence over you and talk you into these things to waste your money.
It's coming. It's coming. At some point, it will come.
So, yeah, so I'm pretty excited about seeing them at DragonCon. At the least, I will go to their panel. But I may, you know, we'll see. If I get pictures with them, I'll definitely post it on our Facebook page.
That'd be awesome. Now, I'm curious because Karen Gillan has Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Arthur Darvill has Legends of Tomorrow, DC. Does River Song have any current projects, or is she kind of just floating around out there?
I know she was in Arrow, at least briefly. I don't watch the show Arrow, but I know she's shown up in it. So has Barrowman. He was a pretty major character. Do you watch Arrow?
I watched the first couple episodes, and I really couldn't get past some of the CW-ness that was in it. So I haven't seen it in a while.
That's fair. And I watched the entire first season and part of the second season, and kind of it fizzled out for me. So I got a little bit further than you did, but I'm kind of the same way. I feel like the quality of those shows, after watching some of the really high quality shows that are out there right now, it's hard to go back to some of that, you know, kind of network CW stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I really wanted to kind of jump into that universe, because I know with the whole DC television universe going on right now, and they're kind of tying like Supergirl and Flash and Legends of Tomorrow, and
they're building a universe.
And Arrow, they definitely have this universe, and I like what they're doing. But I've had a hard time really buying into it. Now, so yeah, they have Alex Kingston has shown up in Arrow. John Barrowman has shown up in Arrow. And now you have Arthur Darvill, who is in Legends of Tomorrow, which is part of the same universe. So yeah, there's a lot of Doctor Who representation in the DC TV universe.
Yeah, and I was just checking her IMDb. She's really not in all that much. After Arrow, she's in a cartoon, Transformers Rescue Bots. But yeah, there's nothing really that she's working on currently.
Well, she had the big episode with Doctor Who that wasn't too long ago. And there's always the possibility they'd bring her back to Doctor Who if she doesn't have too much else going on, right?
Yeah, always the potential, right?
So so that's Dragon Con, but then we also have Karen Gillan and the 11th Doctor, Matt Smith, are going together to New York Comic Con, which is in October, which I will also be attending.
So fancy that.
I definitely won't be getting photo ops with them in New York Comic Con because the prices go way up. I'm guessing that both of them will probably be over $100 to get a picture with. I know that's kind of been the going rate for people like that. So as much as I'd like to meet Matt Smith, I probably won't fork out that kind of money. But I'm hoping they'll also do some sort of a panel, and that would be fun to see those two together again. I did see them at Philly Comic Con previously together. So, yeah. So that's kind of my con schedule coming up, and the Doctor Who actors that I hopefully will be able to see there. And if anybody that listens to this show goes to these conventions, you know, don't be shy. If you see me there, definitely say hi.
Jumping in on the con circuit, I also just saw that Jenna Coleman and Karen Gillan are both going to be in Boston for a Comic-Con together. So the two Doctor Who companions will be together there.
Great. Yeah, I know that I believe Capaldi and Clara, Jenna Coleman was at a con recently in D.C. called Awesome Con. So yeah, there's a lot of really good Doctor Who representation right now in the cons. So pretty much any city you live near that has a big convention, there's probably a good chance that one of the major actors from the modern Doctor Who series will be attending.
I really can't help but think that it has to do with some of the projects that they're working on. I know that a lot of the I know that older shows and kind of the legacy shows, they have their former stars showing up and doing the con circuit. But with these, knowing that they have current projects that they're doing and they're really trying to get the word out for it, it just makes sense that they would start showing up more and more at similar cons together.
Yeah, and I think the cons have really learned, you know, how to treat these celebrities right and kind of get them to come back. And I mean, there's definitely a monetary side to it too. They get paid to come to the convention. They get to, you know, they get a pretty good, you know, portion of the profits from like the photo ops and the autographs. And you know, just speaking from experience as a volunteer at a convention and seeing the kind of money these people are bringing in just a very short amount of time. You know, there's definitely the monetary side to it, but just probably as important as trying to push their current projects.
Yeah, makes sense.
So, but yeah, so with the next season of Doctor Who still being pretty far off, we have started to see little things leaking out as far as you know, set photos and things like that. And I know you're really good at finding this stuff more than I am. I think you had kind of posted some stuff on our Facebook page, or at least somewhere, maybe on Twitter, about, you know, some of these set photos that are popping up showing the Doctor in some interesting costumes.
Yeah, they've been fun to see come out. I mean, we had pictures of the Doctor and Bill and Nardole kind of all mingling together. And then there were these pictures that came out that, as you've said before, you're a fan of the historical type settings. And these photos definitely are the historical type settings. I mean, we get the Doctor in full long black coat. We have him with a top hat on. It's going to be interesting. I'm really curious to see what episodes or what the substance of these episodes end up being, because they are historical costumes.
Yeah, and so you mentioned seeing Nardole, and he is not a robot, at least not in the set photos we saw, right?
He has a body.
Right. He looks like Nardole. He's not in the big giant robot.
He definitely has a body.
So yeah, so we know that he's not, or at least in some way he will be kind of his normal self, because we had speculated about what version of him we were going to see. So that kind of solves that mystery. But then, yeah, the whole idea of the Doctor with the top hat and all that, it's, you know, it's, we've seen the Doctor go back to that era before. You know, that's where the Doctor met Clara. So it's, and we've seen Matt Smith a couple different times in wearing a top hat in a couple different episodes. So we know the Doctor, you know, is not averse to wearing a top hat. And I think Capaldi, he pulls off that look pretty well. He's got the look for that era for sure.
Yeah, he kind of looks like he's straight out of the Christmas Carol.
Yeah, just to
be honest.
I could see him playing Scrooge.
Yeah, it definitely could fit. Top hats never go out of fashion. They're like bow ties. They're cool.
But one thing I did see a set photo of him without the top hat, but I believe he was wearing the same like long black coat, and his hair is, you know, super white and poofy, and he's really starting to look like the Third Doctor more and more. I know there was comparisons to the Third Doctor, you know, early on when they first started releasing photos of what Capaldi was going to be wearing as the Doctor and the red lining in the coat and all that stuff. But even more and more as the character is, you know, kind of changing his style a little bit in the way he wears his hair and things like that, I'm really starting to see kind of that influence from the John Pertwee's Third Doctor.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, and this blew my mind when I saw it, but it's been 3 years since Capaldi has been announced. So he was announced as the Doctor 3 years ago. And when he was announced as the Doctor, he was announced as the older Doctor, or the oldest, oldest doctor to their oldest actor to play the doctor. So now he definitely is the oldest actor to play the doctor. And I think some of his age is showing, as silly as that might sound. But after 3 years, it's like, okay, he does look older. And the gray, whitish, poofy hair definitely lends itself to it.
Yeah, so there, some interesting shots. I think we got some shots of the companion as well.
Yeah, Bill is definitely in some of those pictures. In a green dress, definitely more period piece. Again, dressed for the weather. So she's there. She's in it.
Moving on to kind of season 11, I know, and we don't have to, you know, talk about this too much, but recently Stephen Moffat has kind of been quoted talking about the future of Capaldi as the doctor. I know a lot of people were speculating with the changing of the guard after season 10, Moffat's leaving. We're going to get Chibnall kind of as the new showrunner, and it would be the perfect time to start with a new doctor. So a lot of people were just kind of taking it as fact that, you know, Capaldi's last season would be season 10, but it would never had been stated that that was the case. And now with some comments that Moffat has recently made, it's seeming more and more like Capaldi may stick around a little bit longer than some people were expecting.
Yeah, and I was kind of in the same boat as far as jumping on board with some of those rumors or some of the conjecture that, you know what, we might be drawing near to the end of Capaldi. And it would make a lot of sense for Moffat to go out with a regeneration, for Chibnall to take over with a new doctor, and just see how things develop from there. That said, Moffat has definitely come out and said that at least, he's not writing the end of Capaldi. So there's still room for something odd to happen as Chibnall takes over. But Moffat, he's not planning on Capaldi leaving. He likes Capaldi. He's on board with Capaldi's doctor, and he's ready to see him go forward.
Maybe Moffat just doesn't want to be the bad guy in this situation. So he's kind of thinking, all right, if you guys want a new doctor, you're going to have to write that into the first episode of your season. But I'm not writing it into the finale.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely would put Capaldi, or not Capaldi, Moffat into a pretty interesting position to have to come up with something. And it would seem like, I don't know, it would seem like a good way to go out, I guess. But I don't know. I haven't been a huge fan of Matt Smith's regeneration, so I don't know if I trust Moffat with another one.
Right, yeah. Well, at least we wouldn't have to do old man makeup because he's already there.
It's already there. And we know that it's not going to be a regeneration to Matt Smith, so hey.
But to be fair, Capaldi looks great for his age.
He does.
I'm definitely not knocking the guy for his age. I mean, if you look at Hartnell, and who was actually younger than Capaldi when he was the doctor, you know, Capaldi's a lot more hip in his old age than Hartnell was.
Capaldi has a lot going for him. I mean, give him some sonic sunglasses and electric guitar, and that guy can rock.
Right. So, yeah, I don't know. Part of me kind of wants a new doctor with the new showrunner. Let him kind of create Doctor Who, you know, from scratch, you know, clean slate. But I do like Capaldi a lot, and you know, it would be sad to see him leave. So if they do decide that that will be the end, I hope he gets a very fitting ending as the Doctor.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. The way that I feel about Doctor Who right now, I'm very wishy-washy. It's one of those things where it's like, you know what? They could keep Capaldi, and that'd be awesome just to see what Chibnall does with him. But he could go, and that would be awesome just to see how he goes and what Chibnall's able to do with a new Doctor.
Yeah, and he's had his time. I mean, when it comes to modern doctors, they kind of have a shelf life, and he's definitely, you know, he's what, season 8, 9, 10 now. So like he's guaranteed to be at least 3 seasons, and if he gets 11, it'll be 4 seasons. That's actually more than most of the modern doctors got.
Yeah, and I feel like I was pretty dogmatic towards the end with Matt Smith that, no, I was ready for him to go. I was ready for a new doctor. I wanted to see what could happen. But here recently, going back and watching some of Matt Smith's episodes, I've kind of found myself wishing that I wasn't as dogmatic. And so I think I'm I'm somewhat cautious when it comes to Capaldi.
Well, that's a nice transition, I think, to our review of the next Chibnall episode, because we have been reviewing a lot of Matt Smith lately, and I was kind of the same way, looking back and thinking, man, why was I so hard on Smith, you know, toward the end of his run, and why was I so ready for him to go? And then I watched The Power of Three, and it all came rushing back to me.
Really? Really?
Oh, yes. The clowny doctor that Smith had become toward the end of his run came out in full force in The Power of Three. And I was reminded again, like, oh, yes, this is why I was ready to see something new. So, yes, we will be reviewing The Power of Three. And I kind of tipped my hand on some of my thoughts there. But it is Series 7, Episode 4. It aired on September 22nd of 2012. And as you guys...
Which, stop right there, 2012. That blows me away.
Yes.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. Yeah, Smith, and that was, let's say, season 7 was his final season, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yep. So.
Because the episode after this is Angels Take Manhattan, so we lose the pawns.
Yes, yes, and I did watch that. I couldn't help myself, but after watching Power of Three, the first time I watched Power of Three, I watched Angels Take Manhattan, and then the second time I watched Power of Three, I watched Angels Take Manhattan again. Which I believe, you know, just kind of getting ahead of ourselves, I think Angels Take Manhattan was a much better episode than The Power of Three. A much better representation of what I like to see from the Doctor and Amy and Rory and River. That was more my flavor than The Power of Three. So
I'm going to hold back my thoughts.
Okay.
I'm holding them back right now.
So, yes, it was written by Chris Chibnall. We are going through the Chris Chibnall written episodes, and this is the last one.
Yeah, this is the very last one. After that, we have nothing more from Chibnall that we're going to talk about. Well, there is one little short, but it's not really an episode. It's just a storyboard.
Okay. Yeah, this is the last one. I think throughout all of the stuff that we've been reviewing that was written by Chibnall, we've got a lot of variety. It's not like he's a one-note guy when it comes to writing Doctor Who. We got a lot of different, you know, characters that he wrote for, different alien species that were involved or referenced. We got the Doctor angry. We got the Doctor silly. We got the Doctor every way. You know, I think, you know, it, to me, I see a lot of potential in him being the showrunner because he has shown just in the few things that we've reviewed that he's got a lot of range.
I would agree. Each episode has been distinctly its own. Each episode has been, in a way, very unique to the episode itself. That said, I feel like there's some very, I don't know, some trends that I've seen throughout all the episodes, things that really stuck out to me, and especially in The Power of Three. I wasn't sold on this episode the first time I watched it. In fact, one thing that stuck out to me about all of Chibnall's episodes, and I don't know, I kind of think you might agree, all of them are somewhat forgettable the first time you watch them. None of them are like, oh, wow, that was my favorite episode. But when you rewatch it, there's a lot more to them than what originally jumped out, at least to me. And so that's one of those things, some of those like undercurrents of the story that Chibnall seems to handle very well.
Yeah, and I felt that way about specifically the Solarian episodes and the dinosaurs on a spaceship. Like, I remember not liking those episodes, and then on the rewatch, I was like, oh, these, they have a lot more going on than I remembered, and I actually kind of enjoyed them. For Power of Three, it didn't have the same effect. I remembered not liking this episode, and then upon a rewatch, I was like, everything that I had remembered not liking, I was like, okay, it's not surprising me, and like, oh yeah, there's this element or this depth that I didn't notice the first time. It was pretty across the board the same experience.
Okay, cool.
forget that, because we had talked before about Dinosaurs on a Spaceship being the kind of Rory's dad episode, like his spotlight. And I didn't think that he had that big of a role in The Power of Three, but I had forgotten how much he was in it. So he had as big of a role, I think, in this episode as he did in Dinosaurs on a Spaceship.
Yeah, and like as I watched So I watched it initially, and then I watched it two other times. And like as I watched the episode, the first time I watched it, it was like, okay, it's about these cubes. And that's what this episode is about. It's about these cubes. And then the second time I watched it, I thought, well, no, it's actually not about the cubes. There's something bigger going on here. And then the third time I watched it, believe it or not, the title actually made sense to me. And it's like, wait, this entire episode, the cube really has nothing to do with this entire episode. This entire episode is about the relationship between the Doctor and his companions. And I might be totally silly for only picking up on that the third time I watched the episode. But to watch Capaldi handle that, not Capaldi, Chibnall, handle that relationship between the Doctor and the companions, and the Rory's dad's concern for that relationship, and kind of watch the development of that over the span of the episode, I think that's what stuck out to me, and really it overshadowed in my mind the goofiness of the cubes, that there really was no point of the cubes at the end.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. I think the saving grace for me for this episode, the thing that made it interesting enough to maybe revisit someday, was the relationship. And kind of a lot of the theme of this episode was Amy and Rory kind of trying to get back into real life and realizing that there's a life outside of the Doctor, and how that dynamic is, and having the Doctor talk about, you know, kind of what has happened to his previous companions and things like that. That was what I found interesting. I felt like the device that they used to kind of have a story to tell that included that with the boxes and what it ended up becoming, that to me was a pretty big letdown. I felt like the idea of these mysterious boxes coming to Earth and them being there for so long that humans just got used to it, and that was actually pretty cool. It was the payoff at the end was what was missing for me.
Yeah, it, I think so. I totally agree. Like the tally and all that jazz that came out towards the end, to me that feels totally tacked on to this episode. So like we have the portal in the lift, we have that, all everything else like that, I feel like that could have been hacked off and have just it be about the cubes, and maybe even leaving that a mystery. But the moment that they're standing in front of the TARDIS and Amy says, and that's when we discovered the power of the three, it's like, okay, that's the point of the episode. But more leading forward, knowing that the episode after is Angels Take Manhattan, and that's where Rory and Amy are no longer there, and you have everything that took place in this episode, The Power of Three, with them contemplating, hey, should we be doing this? We really like our life. And then the Doctor being like, hey, I miss you guys, and staying with them for a year, like 365 days he stayed in one place. And then to have everything happen with the cubes, and then the dad be like, no, they need to travel with you. And then them go, and then the episode immediately after, they're gone. Chibnall was given like this essential cornerstone of an episode, one final chance to take the hook that was Rory and Amy and drive it into our hearts. And upon watching it three times, I think he did an incredible job of handling that. Yeah, the cubes was odd. There was a lot of other stuff thrown in there, because we get Lethbridge Stewart just tossed at us. We have UNIT reintroduced. And yet at the end, like at the heart of it, is that relationship.
Right. Yeah. So we're kind of like, we're jumping like right to the end, you know, kind of. Let's talk about some of the details of the episode. So you had mentioned Kate Stewart showing up.
Yeah.
I had forgotten this is kind of where they reintroduced UNIT and had her show up for the first time. And that was a kind of a nice surprise to see her come through the door, because she plays a big part, you know, moving forward in the series. You know, we get her in the 50th anniversary special. We get her, you know, currently in, you know, pretty recent episodes with Capaldi. So it was kind of cool to see her come in here with Smith. I had forgotten that she was a part of this.
Yeah, I did too. And to have her kind of burst through the door when Rory's in his pants.
In his pants, or not.
Yeah, or not. It was it definitely was a surprise.
I like her line, with dress sense like that, you must be the doctor. You know, so she didn't know, kind of, they went to the home because there was a source of energy or whatever they had detected, but she didn't know she was walking in to meet the doctor again, or I guess maybe for the first time.
She was hoping it was him.
Yeah. So that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, kind of the thing I was talking about with what I didn't like about Smith and the way he plays the doctor and how he gets almost too goofy really came out in the scenes where the doctor is kind of getting bored and tired of waiting. So he goes outside and like juggles a soccer ball a million times. And I think he like painted a fence or something.
Paints a fence. Yeah.
That part and just kind of the way he was acting and, you know, it to me, that kind of humor for the most part doesn't work for me. So I was a little like, okay, you know, this is really reminding me of the things that got tiresome about Smith's run of the Doctor.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. That said, I don't know. To me, like thinking on it, it was one of those instances where it's we don't see the Doctor staying in one place all that often. At least not in New Who. It's always run here, run there, do this, do that. You don't really see him sitting in one place and observing a cube for 4, 5, 6 hours. So it was one of those interesting moments to be like, okay, is that who he is?
He starts to act like a spoiled child if he has to wait for anything for more than an hour.
He doesn't like waiting, right? He would not have waited for the Rogue One trailer.
So there's so much more to that we could talk about, but this is not a Star Wars podcast. But yes, he does not like to wait, but he did, you had said he stayed. So he stayed with them for a year or
cause yeah,
did leave at one point.
He shows back up at their wedding party. Okay. He whisks them away. They're gone for 7 weeks.
Right.
He comes back and he's sitting next to Amy and he says, hey, do you mind if I stay with you? And she said, well, that didn't really work out last time. He said, I'll be better this time. I miss you. And then like 365 days pass, right? No. Yes. because at the end she says, the doctor lived with us for a year, right?
I don't know. I guess I didn't pick up on that. I missed that. Hmm. That he stayed that long. I knew he had stayed for a while, but then he got antsy and kind of ran off. And then he came back and then pulled them back into the TARDIS for, you know, some adventures for 7 weeks. And then came back for the party. But it never seemed like he stayed there very long. It was a very short amount of time. I think a lot of time had passed for them.
Yeah.
In that they were, you know, Rory gets a full-time job. Amy decides to be a bridesmaid, you know, and they kind of talk about this stuff that's going on and how much time they're committing to. But I never got the impression the doctor was there for very long. So, but.
Which even them waiting or getting into all the things, I found it funny because like they're always struggling with the, what are we going to do? We have all this stuff going on in our life. And then they leave their wedding party. They're gone for 7 weeks, and they come back like an hour later.
Right.
It's like, why can't you just do that?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that at all.
But it was kind of cool to see when he does take them away. You get the reference to the Zygons, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah.
The Hotel Savoy, and there was apparently a Zygon spaceship underneath it, and half of the staff were Zygons in disguise. So that was kind of a nice reference, and I believe a reference to the Zygons before we actually saw Zygons appear in the modern series.
Yeah, the first appearance of the Zygons in the modern series was the 50th anniversary episode.
Right. So that was kind of a fun reference, and then we got a reference to Henry VIII as well. Apparently,
Amy marries him.
Amy marries him. Which I was seeing
on their anniversary.
I was seeing some fact that was relating to, I guess, the doctor having some sort of a relationship with another person that was royalty that was related to Henry VIII. So if Amy actually married Henry VIII, then she was related to the doctor in some other way. It was interesting. I forgot how it all tied together, but yeah, so there was a connection there as well. We got to see Fish Fingers and Custard come back.
He did, and he invented Yorkshire pudding. Savory pudding. Sound familiar? I loved that line. It was just perfect because Rory laughed at him, and then he tossed that out there.
The doctor does not like Twitter. I believe this is the second time I've heard him say something negative about Twitter.
Well, it also shows its age, because when they mentioned where the cubes were getting posted, they said Flickr and it just slipped me. Flickr and somewhere else, but it definitely wasn't like the main social networks that we would find.
Right. Yeah, it was a bit dated, I guess. Yeah.
Although they existed, they weren't posting to Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah, Twitter has definitely been, or Twitter is the one that is still kind of valid out of those that they had listed, right?
I don't even think they listed Twitter.
Well, he said she did say, no, she did say something something, and then it even has its own Twitter account that already has, or however many Twitter accounts, and then he's like, the doctor's like, Twitter, you know, like,
yes,
not a fan kind of thing.
Yes. Twitter is mentioned again. The doctor seems similarly unimpressed.
Right. And a little bit about kind of the relationship stuff too, I thought was interesting, was Rory's father, Brian, his concern for his, you know, his son and his son's wife, in that, you know, they left for 7 weeks. He recognizes the fact that they're not wearing the same clothes when they come back. So he's like, how long have you guys been gone? And then he kind of calls out the doctor, like, well, what, you know, what happens to people that travel with you? And I thought it was a pretty interesting response that the doctor gave.
Yeah, that idea of him going through the list. And in the end, very few, and then did he say die?
I believe he said some left me, some got left behind, and some died.
but I believe then he said, as you then go on to read from your notes.
No, actually, I'm not.
I believe he said, and I quote.
No, it's definitely not a quote, and I don't think I got the quote exactly right, but that is the gist of what he said. But then he did say, like, but not them.
Yeah.
Never them. Which, yeah.
Technically was true.
And then he has the touching conversation. See, I'm like talking myself back into liking this episode. He does have the touching conversation with Amy.
You know why? Because I told you to focus on the relationship.
I missed the point. You know, I was so focused on those stupid boxes.
Those crazy boxes that had no point, so much so that they each did something different. It's just telling us the vanity of focusing on the boxes. There's no point. Each one is different. Some even play the chicken dance song.
Oh, yeah. So he has a touching conversation with Amy, kind of, you know, you were the first face that this face saw. I love that line. And then, kind of, it seemed like he was kind of trying to talk her into like, hey, you guys should keep traveling with me. But he's coming to the realization that that's not the long term. That's not what's best for her and Rory long term.
Yeah. The idea that they would soon fade away, as he's talking about how it's just a small corner of this, which is 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 growing. It's always growing, always expanding. And soon you'll fade away.
Yeah. I'm running to you and Rory before you fade from me. So I thought that was another really good line.
Yeah.
So yeah, that stuff was pretty interesting, pretty touching, and knowing what is going to happen to them, you know, where they really like literally fade away from him, you know, as the angels take them away, and then kind of fade away into their own existence, that he can never see them again. So it's kind of some sad foreshadowing, and you're almost like, man, they had their chance to kind of jump ship and live happily ever after. And they didn't take it. They stayed one adventure too long.
One adventure too long.
Yeah.
But they got to see Manhattan.
They did, yeah. There was another line that I thought was interesting. And there's occasionally these lines that I always wonder where I'm like, was that put in there because like Moffat knew what was coming down the road? Or is it just coincidence? Oh, what was it? It was something about having more swings to swing on or something like that. Do you remember that line? I can find it.
No, but now that you mention it, I can totally see how you would see that.
I'm gonna find it so I can get it here. Oh yeah. Yeah, he just says, he does say, like, there's more for the doctor to do, more swings to swing on, I believe is the line. And it just instantly made me think of kind of his visitation with Clara as a child and just sitting on the swing with her. And I was like, oh, Moffat, are you, like, did you drop that in there because you knew what was coming, or is that just a complete coincidence?
Or did he create the scene because he wrote that line and then he thought, oh, man, we need to tie that in somehow.
We need to have a scene with him on a swing and make it important, you know, a key scene. So that instantly made me think of that. So I thought that was kind of a cool connection, even though it may have not been on purpose.
Yeah, I think one thing, and I was tempted to just ask if we wanted to do kind of a wrap up of key themes that we spotted from Chibnall, which might be too big of a conversation to have, but I'm just time and time again, just, I don't know, not overwhelmed, not floored, but really surprised at some of the lines, some of those big moments that Chibnall was given in his episodes. There are times where he has the doctor say something or something happens in the episode, and it's like a key moment for the season or for the series. And I think that's the thing with this episode, is it's just, to me, without this episode, Angels Take Manhattan, it's not that it would be any less important, but it seems like this pushes you even closer to the edge before Angels Take Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. This is one of those episodes where, although as a whole, I feel like the episode wasn't that great for me, there were enough, you know, key conversations in dialogue between these characters that it is almost a necessary, you need to watch this before you watch Angels Take Manhattan. I had forgotten that there was, you know, kind of some of these key moments.
What has been one of our criticisms of the way that they've approached Capaldi's doctor? It really has been that he hasn't had these key moments. He hasn't had these conversations. He hasn't had the dialogue. He hasn't had the monologue that really makes you look at him and think, oh, wow, he's the doctor. He's had some here and there, maybe like one or two a series. But it seems like just within the episodes that we watched from Chibnall, there are three or four per episode. It's just, that's one thing that has me excited, is it's if Chibnall brings back those moments, those monologues, those dialogues, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, Chibnall may bring back the doctor's humanity. And I think that's what's different.
That's a good way to say it.
Yeah, that's what's been different for me between Smith and Capaldi, is Smith was a big believer in humanity. And even in this episode, when he's talking to the Chakri guy, and he's like, he's defending humanity. He's talking up humans, what their worth to the world is. You know, the Chakri wants to wipe out humanity before they can spread across the galaxy, before they, you know, start to populate these other planets. And the doctor is like, no, like, put up what humans have done against what your species has done, and I'll take the humans. You know, I'll take their side. Like, they are the ones I would bet on, because even as bad and as humans have been, or mistakes that they've made, they're still, when it comes down to it, good. They're still, you know, they still matter. There's value. They bring value to the galaxy. And that's something that Smith always preached. But
yeah,
Capaldi's been the opposite. Capaldi is constantly talking about humans negatively, you know, calling them apes at one point, you know, how worthless they are. He doesn't seem to value human life that much. When, you know, characters would die on his adventures, he'd almost kind of make it a joke. And I think even with his relationship with Clara, although you can tell the relationship with Clara is very important to him, it's a very selfish relationship, and it's very focused on her as an individual and not necessarily the human race. So I wonder if maybe if Capaldi does stick around for the first season with Chibnall, if we might see a little bit more of that humanity brought back into the Doctor.
Yeah, and like you said, Smith was always preaching kind of the value of humanity, and we saw that in The Hungry Earth with the Silurians, and Smith having them sit down at the table together and telling them how much value both sides had. And it would be really easy, I guess. I know that I've heard the argument made that Capaldi's doctor is just very jaded. He's gone through so much. He's seen so much. And to me, that would make sense if Capaldi was like after Eccleston or maybe before Eccleston. And then you can see this progression from Capaldi to Smith. But it's just, it's one of those weird things where you have Tennant who's starting to warm up to humanity. Then you have Smith who's all about humanity. And then you just take a nosedive with Capaldi. It does seem to be a disconnect. And I would love, I don't know how that would fit with Capaldi's character, but I would love to see that aspect brought back with him.
Yeah, and maybe it doesn't fit with Capaldi as the doctor. Maybe we you know, Capaldi, we've seen him grow a little bit as the doctor and change. He's not quite as mean as he was, you know, at first. But maybe ultimately we never see him kind of reach that level that Smith was at, which is fine. You know, the doctor should always be a little bit different. And maybe we don't get that until the next version of the doctor. But it'll be interesting to see with Chibnall writing for Capaldi, if he does, what tone changes we see. Because there will definitely be some changes, I'm sure. Moffat has probably a very specific way that he writes for Capaldi.
Yeah, I'm not pulling for, I guess, the overt goofiness that Smith brought to the table, but having the Doctor return as more of an overt champion for the people, for humanity, I'm all for that. If Chibnall brings that back, I think that's a huge win.
I feel like there's not really much more to talk about. You know, we can get into some story details. The Shockery, for whatever reason, I thought they were like a bigger deal when the Doctor kind of recognized who he was dealing with. And he was like, oh, I thought you guys were just, you know, kind of scary stories that Gallifreyans were told. And I'm thinking, oh, man, this must be like a big villain from the classic series. So I go and look it up and I'm like, oh, this is their first appearance.
Yeah, that's. I think they were mentioned once before in like an audio drama or something like that. But
I believe that audio drama actually came out after this episode because I did look that up.
I rushed and looked at it too because I'm like, I wanted to make sure that I didn't miss something about the Shakri or the tally. And it was the same thing where it's like, oh, well, there's five sentences and all it says is exactly what I just watched in the episode. So,
and I feel like a villain like that, like the Shakri, and the fact that they feel like they're, you know, almost these godlike creatures that need to go around and fix things. And, you know, they see a species like the humans that they see as dangerous, so they're going to wipe them out. You know, I actually kind of like the idea of that villain. I feel like it was almost wasted in this story. I felt like they could be used on a bigger scale. So that is probably part of my disappointment. And that in Moffat fashion, you get the situation where a third of the population of the world died, and the doctor doesn't know how to deal with it. And then within like a minute, it's all solved. You know, and that's, to me, I was like, oh man, all this build up. And then he's just like, oh, the box has caused everybody to have a heart attack. Well, let's just reverse it and make it so they all get shocked and they'll all wake up and live. I'm not sure that's how it works.
Yeah, especially depending on how long it took him, because
especially of how long they were out. Yeah,
like, yeah. I'm pretty sure at least a half hour passed, and by that point, I'm pretty sure you're dead.
Yeah. So there were definitely some details in the story that I was just like, oh man, I feel like they could have just with a few changes made it a little bit more palatable.
Yeah, I mean, they could have just rebooted the universe.
Right, that we know that we don't put that past Moffat. So yeah, it was too simple of a solution for me, and the potential of kind of the mystery of the boxes was really cool, and then this big villain shows up that has all this power that the doctor, you know, had scary stories told to him as a child that, you know, has some connection to Gallifrey. It's like two really good ideas that were used poorly.
I wouldn't be surprised if Chibnall pulled back out the Shockery. What would that be like?
I think that'd be great. Like,
the Shockery become his weeping angels.
Yeah, let's revisit this idea of the Shockery and kind of give them their due, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they used to travel in groups of seven. That'd be fun to see. Have the Doctor also in the past run across a group of seven that he has to face.
Right. So, well, yeah. So. overall, my thoughts for this one, the story kind of fell flat for me, but there were some great character moments that were foreshadowing what's going to happen with the pawns.
Yeah, and I think I made it pretty clear. I think the story really had nothing to do with the cubes or the chakra or anything like that. I think it had to do solely with the relationship, and there were enough. The relationship was highlighted enough where I think Chibnall did an incredible job of prepping the heart for the wound that was about to come.
So I think we're ready to wrap this one up. I did want to say one thing, though, because I know we're not going to be reviewing Angels Take Manhattan anytime soon.
Go for it.
The fact that the Statue of Liberty is a weeping angel makes no sense at all, and it's really stupid.
Oh, come on. Spoilers. We should review it, because I, for once, I am in full agreement. That is just ridiculous. There's no point. It was ridiculous the first time I watched it. And it has been ridiculous every time I revisit that episode.
Watching the episode again tonight, and somebody that was over at my house was watching it for the first time. And they were like, oh, that is such a genius thing to think about, because the Statue of Liberty, the reason why we've never realized that she's a weeping angel is because, you know, it's a monument that people are always looking at, so she never moves. And I was like, yeah, okay, that's fine, but she just walked all the way across the city to kill this guy on this rooftop, and nobody looked at her one time.
Not only that, she was assembled
in one of the most populated cities in the world. Like, you can't tell me that she walked. I don't care what time of night it was, that this gigantic statue walked all the way across New York City to this rooftop without somebody looking at her to stop her.
Yeah, I mean, and the whole idea of the Weeping Angels are that they're aliens, right? They're not like spirits that inhabit statues. They're aliens.
I was a little confused about that. Now we're getting way more into this than I thought we would. But I was a little confused about what, you know, because we have a very distinct version of the Weeping Angels that look like angels. They cover their faces when they're not moving. They have a very distinct look. But when we go to Angels Take Manhattan, it's like all the statues are this.
Yeah. And so, I can understand the little cherubs, like, okay, they're like angels. They're just little scarier versions of them. But the Statue of Liberty, I can't piece that together in my mind, because
I feel like there was a symbol.
It was assembled. You had to put it together. So it's not an alien.
Yes. But I feel like there was some explanation in the episode on the fact that the angels were, in a way, kind of either transforming themselves or taking possession of the existing statues. So maybe the Statue of Liberty was assembled, but at some point the angels came in and kind of, you know, replaced it with themselves. I don't know.
So what happens when you go inside the Statue of Liberty?
I just saw the Statue of Liberty for the first time in July.
Okay.
Like, actually went to the island. Now, I'd seen it from a distance, but I actually went to that island to see it up close. So it's cool. It's definitely a really cool monument. I've never had gone up and looked at it up close, so it's something to see for sure. But yeah, it's almost as bad as the whole, like, our moon is a dragon egg, like a space dragon egg. It's close to that, as far as just like, all right, Doctor Who, I know you're silly and I know that's kind of part of your charm, but sometimes you push it a little too far. So
they're like hermit crabs. Weeping angels are hermit crabs. They grow out of their shells, they take another.
Yeah, right. So yep. So that's our bonus talk about about Angels Take Manhattan, which is not written by Chibnall.
Not at all.
But maybe we'll review it just for fun.
We're gonna have to figure something else to review. We're on to Chibnall.
We had talked about going through River Song episodes as a possibility, Eighth Doctor movie as a possibility. If anybody has opinions about this stuff, feel free to shoot us an email or a tweet.
We have a lot of time to kill still.
We have some open air and not any way to really get into the classic stuff right now. So yeah, if anybody has any requests on episodes they'd like us to review, that might be a good way to do it.
Yep.
All right. Well, until then, or until next time, you can always leave us a review on iTunes. If you listen to our show and you enjoy it, we'd love for you to head on over to iTunes, leave us a nice 5-star review. You can follow us on Twitter @BadWolfPodcast, Facebook, Search for Bad Wolf Radio and you'll find us. You can always send us an email, badwolfpodcast@gmail.com, and you can find us over on the Pod Tyrant Network at geektyrant.com. And until next time,
later days.